HPR's Broadsides, a special interview with Las Vegas ACLU State Chair. Stay with us. Coming up.
The Homeland. Our problem. For only one reason. That president raises the question, who owns the land? The homeless. Our problem. For only one reason, our president raises the question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? Who owns the land? Is there a connection? Who owns the land? To all imperialism. Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me? Who owns the land? I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to sleep. This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to be. Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be that there's a connection? Who owns the land? To my daily eviction. Who owns the land? And the extermination. Who owns the land? Of the Native American. Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me? Who owns the land? I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? Its own self. Maybe it's the Native America. The homeless are a problem for only one reason. My president raises a question, who owns the land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Your president raises a question, who owns the land? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home?
And welcome to another edition of Bathrob's Pierre's Broadsides. It's March 27th, 2003. In the studio with me, co-hosting, is the infamous Jeffrey Gale, our public affairs expert who keeps current on all things Washingtonian and Iraqian. And on the line is Thomas Levitt, Green Party activist and French fries ne'er-do-well. Or actually, you've been hosting some weird new website that's gotten you international fame. What's happening there, Thomas?
I launched a website Monday night called buyfrenchnow.com, which is kind of put up in reaction to the nonsense over, like the Republicans in Congress changing the menu from French fries and French toast to freedom fries and freedom toast, and then, you know, President Bush's Air Force One changing the menu from French toast to Freedom Toast. And, you know, there's a suggestion by a woman in Congress that, you know, they dig up the bodies of American servicemen in Europe and haul them back over here at taxpayer expense because the French soil is contaminated. It's unworthy of our fallen soldiers.
Contamination. Well, the U.S. knows something about that, being sort of an expert in that matter in Iraq with uranium-depleted weapons.
Yes, depleted uranium. 320 tons of it dropped on Iraq during the first Gulf War. And, you know, it's not officially acknowledged, but there's a lot of evidence to say that the reason why so many American service people who served during the first Gulf War now qualify for federal disability benefits, 221,000 actually, 30% of all those deployed is because of the side effects of depleted uranium, on top of everything else they had to put up with.
Well, surely Representative Sam Farr, our local anti-war man, is interested in stopping this uranium-depleted menace.
I'm sure that once Sam hears loudly from many different members of his constituency, much as he did with the war, that his position will evolve.
However, at the moment, as I understand it, he continues to say nothing as the generals load up their, well, they roll into Iraq with tanks shielded with uranium-depleted stuff, and then they got uranium-depleted shells to get through the Iraqi tanks, and
yes.
It's a uranium-depleted city. But, Thomas, the reason I called you had nothing to do more with your, had more to do with your local expertise and with your foreign expertise.
Right.
You are a Green Party member. You're also an observer, and you were a one-time member of the SCAN Steering Committee, or Sneering Committee, as some
elected.
Of us have called it. And I just actually got the SCAN newsletter today. Santa Cruz Action Network, SCAN, of course, is the group that elected the current shitty city council.
Elected three members of it, right?
Let's see.
Ed Porter, Emily Riley, and Tim Fitzmaurice.
Let's see. So Kennedy, Rotkin,
Tim can really...
Kennedy, Rotkin, and Premack, and Matthews, it's true, did not get,
get
the endorsement of
SCAN.
Well, at one time, they were SCAN endorsed, all these
That's
people,
true.
Except for Premack.
Right. I don't think anybody ever endorsed Premack.
We can understand why, at least some of us. But SCAN is, of course, the group that came out with some nice positions, as the Green Party has, around, for example, the sleeping ban, stopping laws that criminalize poor people in public spaces like the downtown ordinances, and even supporting rights for the Latino people in the Nueva Vista Dolphin Lee Project. But all these fine-sounding, high-minded principles were sort of abandoned by the people that SCAN supported, and SCAN took no action to censor these folks, as the Green Party has taken no action to censor Tim Fitzmaurice. Yet you, sir, are still hanging out in the intestacies, bowels of these groups. Now, just what do you mean by doing this?
Well, you'll notice that Tim did not get the endorsement in the last election go-around from the Green Party, and I did. That's an indirect censure. Which
but
I
Tim made it onto the council, and you didn't, I want to point out.
Yes, that's true, and I do not believe that the difference was the SCAN endorsement in Tim's case, although if I'd gotten the SCAN endorsement, they'd been willing to stand up for the principles at the membership at large that they advocated, I would have.
Well, my
that
question
made
is this. I mean, I look at this newsletter. I mean, let's talk about SCAN first.
Mm-hmm.
You're not on the steering committee. I guess at one time you were, but you are listed here as being a member. I'm looking at the committee
list. I'm a webmaster.
You are a webmaster, and you are also you're on here. You have some other position. I thought I saw you. Oh yes, you are a you're on the communications committee.
Yes.
I thought they communicated their positions really clearly, which was, we'll give the membership an opportunity to express high-minded principles, but under Nora Hockman and Bernice Belton and Wolfgang Rosenberg's leadership, we will make sure that those principles don't get implemented or interfere with the very pragmatic realpolitik of the city council. What are you doing to make sure that things are going the other way there, Thomas?
Well, I'm there, and I'm participating. I don't think we've made any, decisions. SCAN's committee recently, they've been basically just focusing on actually, keeping the thing actually from completely falling apart.
If we look at the last city council meeting, we see that numerous things have happened. First of all, the kiosk near the Forbidden Fence, mm-hmm. previously owned by Sushi Now's Matisse Selman, has been transferred. I haven't checked, but I'm pretty sure this was passed.
Yeah, I would assume it would have been
Alfredo's
that.
Or whatever it's called. Some other local
Alfresco.
Thank you. Some other local business, yeah. Without any consideration of whether the public is getting screwed again by having a large area of the public sidewalk fenced off from public use, and more important than that, a whole culture of people, young people, poor people, homeless people, musicians, moved away by fiat in a part of this continuing give the police everything they need to drive people away who they feel don't belong downtown. That passed the city council. Citywide permit parking, which makes it essentially gives the city the power through, getting 60% of the residents on one street in an area to come and look for and petition it to require permits in large zones all over the city, which would also criminalize parking your van at night. This is particularly important if you're a poor or homeless person. Anywhere, even in industrial zones, even on city parking lots.
Meanwhile, they're giving away money, and they're proposing to give away $250,000.
What's SCAN doing about this?
SCAN is doing nothing.
The Green Party. What's
this
doing
about this right now? Because it's not in a position to actually do anything.
Oh, it isn't. I see. So SCAN is completely powerless to do anything. Huh?
SCAN has very limited resources at this point.
If you and I can get our fat butts to city council and say something, then SCAN can do the same. I'm sorry, Thomas, I don't buy it.
Well, it's an organization. I'm an individual. Organizations have different constraints in their
Huff is an organization. Huff can get to city council. Downtown for All is an organization. It can get to city council.
Yes.
You know, SCAN got its butt together at least last summer, and the steering committee members went to the city council and denounced the downtown ordinances. Then, of course, they disappeared.
Did do that, yes.
What's that?
The steering committee members did do that.
They did, and then they did absolutely nothing afterward to, let's say, initiate a lawsuit or support individuals who were harassed on the street. They simply went home and sat on their comfortable old liberal asses and did absolutely nothing. The Green Party, on the other hand, had a similar arthritis of the conscience, or whatever you will, hardening of the conscience. You, on the other hand, did run for city council and continue to actively raise these issues at Merry Mondays. So, not a personal criticism of you, but again, these organizations, these that you're associating yourself, are you now or have you ever been a member of SCAN, Thomas Levin?
Yes. I've actually paid my $5 dues. And, you know, that's legitimate criticism that they haven't actually acted. But organizations are made up of individuals, and the individuals with them choose to act or not, and they choose to contribute their resources and time to the organization or not. And the fact is right now that the amount of energy that the core organizers in the Green Party, for example, are putting into the Green Party versus the war is very limited.
What?
I'm not putting a lot of energy into the Green Party myself either at this point.
And yet you're putting exponentially more energy into local issues than people like Paul Franklin or Nancy LaFortune or others who are, nothing against them as individuals, but I note that you brought up three resolutions at the last Green Party meeting. One of them was to endorse the 24-hour vigil, which actually got a majority, but failed because Paul Franklin had a blocking concern. What was that concern that stopped him from endorsing the 24-hour peace vigil?
Well, you know, I can't speak for Paul directly, but he did seem concerned about the cardboard signs, which I did not quite understand.
Cardboard signs. He would have preferred plastic, maybe large.
My interpretation is that his perception was that this was a group of individuals who would whose actions and the way they would be perceived by the public would not contribute positively to convincing a broad section of the public that the Green Party was a credible organization.
So the issue is not supporting a peace vigil to stop the war, but making the Green Party a credible organization. Is that correct?
That is how I would characterize that particular exchange from my perspective.
Mr. Franklin.
Now, I would point out, though, that Paul Franklin has actually done something that I haven't managed to do.
He's got
himself elected to public office and is serving on a school board.
That's nice. What is he doing on the school board that might make us proud of him?
I don't live in Live Oak.
Right. I don't either. And I'm going to ask you about a school board issue in a moment. But before I leave Paul Franklin and the Green Party, since I too was at this meeting you were at, but I'd like to get your perspective on it, since you really were the person who came in with written resolutions. The other resolutions you brought in had to do with chalking, the right of individuals to use erasable chalk on the sidewalk without being harassed by police officers, dragged into courts, and potentially jailed. Mm-hmm. Actually, one person was jailed, Becky Johnson. And then charges, of course, were dropped later after she had expended lots of time and energy, had her home life disrupted, had to borrow
$1,000. That is a very typical pattern, and I believe that they engaged in that pattern with you as well, with this stupid blocking the sidewalk.
That's correct. That was a year ago when actually Sergeant Baker and Matisse Selman, the Sushi Now chief, who now has apparently abandoned his business, recognizing leaving us with this forbidden fence, but the two folks who created this mess, Matisse Selman and Ali Ka, are gone. The Alibaba's Cafe and Sushi Now owner, but actually he's not gone, he's around town, but the businesses are no longer there. They've abandoned it because I think they realized that it was not improving their business, although I can't speak for them. But anyway, back to the Green Party.
You know, I suppose you could ask each of the new tenants whether or not they would agree to go to the previous situation,
which I felt
was more functional, with having the things right next to where you're actually...
as well as New Leaf Market, which I think has been a silent party to a lot of this as well.
They joined the lease in January.
So they're actually an active party.
They're an active party at this point, paying $25 or $50 a month, some ridiculously small money, amount of money that can't even begin to equal the amount of money that must have been spent to construct that area.
This excludes numerous people from two-thirds of the sidewalk in front of a New Leaf Market downtown on Pacific Avenue, and there has been no new area opened up for people to use. I mean, if you would think that if they want to remove a large bit of public space, that the least that the redevelopment agency, the city council, and these businesses could do was set up another area. But no, they don't care about that. Their concern is gentrification of the downtown. Now, continuing with the Green Party, though, the Green Party situation was... you presented a resolution about suggesting that chalking not be considered criminal behavior, erasable chalk on the sidewalk, and you actually got Paul Franklin, after initially blocking that, sort of withdrew his blocking concern, and there was consensus on that resolution, right?
There was consensus on that resolution. I don't recall the exact details of how it was accomplished, and I believe there was consensus on another resolution, which I actually don't recall off the top of my head.
The third resolution, there was chalking, there was there was not consensus on the peace vigil, and there was another resolution. There was a third resolution, the Green Party Act, and my point is that you have taken
I was very disappointed when the Green Party decided not to endorse the peace vigil. I thought that was a class-based decision that really did not respect the Green Party's founding principles.
Perhaps once a listener can tell us what that third decision was, because I certainly don't remember it. When you've hung up, we can go to that. But the reason I called you initially, as well as to castigate you for your questionable association with these ruling class groups, SCAN, the steering committee, and the infamous...
I would not call SCAN a ruling class group at this point. They may have been a ruling class group in the past, but unfortunately, from my perspective, they're not even close. We have a ruling class group that consists of a bunch of people who thought that SCAN was far too liberal for them. From our perspective, thinking that SCAN tends to be too conservative is not very positive.
Indeed. Or at least it's not very popular in the ruling class.
Yes.
But you went to a school board meeting last night where there was an unusual resolution which actually did get an overwhelming majority and was probably supported by the entire Santa Cruz City Council, would be my guess.
I believe the Santa Cruz City Council did endorse this. I do not know what the vote was. But they do tend to vote very well on symbolic peace issues that don't actually translate into local policy.
And them having to do something, like to tell the police not to conduct the drug war or not to to cooperate with the war on terror.
In this case, the school board actually did vote 5-0 to endorse a resolution put forth by the Santa Cruz High School Youth Alliance in conjunction with the Resource Center for Nonviolence requiring that military recruiters obtain the affirmative opt-in consent of a parent before being given the contact information for their children.
So right now it's springtime for the military recruiters all over the country, and particularly
except
in California.
In Santa Cruz.
Except in Santa Cruz, where Santa Cruz schools are now mandated to say, hold up, you got to get the parents okay before we send
we
you our kids' names.
We must have the parents okay before...
You can start propagandizing them.
Yes, before you can start following them home, as happened to one school board member's son, or constantly calling them, as happened to me when I was in high school.
Did you join the Army?
No, I did not. I actually did enlist and went through the and passed the Naval Reserve Officer Training Corps physical, and then for some strange reason, the recruiter, I guess he wanted to like meet his quota and up his numbers, got me to enlist in the regular Navy, and I failed that physical. Fortunately for me, because a year later, the Gulf War happened.
Huh. Well, you have an opportunity
so
now to get into the second war here. I mean, you might show a little patriotism if you don't mind.
Yes, I've been protesting this new war for quite a while. The school board voted 5-0 to, you know, implement that policy, even at the risk of potentially losing $500,000 worth of federal funding, which is what the federal government has said. If you don't give the recruiters this information, we will take your money. Now, there's a substantial body of legal thought to say that that's not an enforceable provision.
We'll see.
But it did take a little bit of courage to actually take, you know, that risk.
What was the division in the audience last night?
It was unanimous. I do not think a single person spoke in favor of letting the military recruiters having the untrammeled access to this information.
How many people showed up?
The room capacity is 56, and there was people spilling out the doors. There must have been at least 70 to 80 people there.
And were there any pro-war people?
I did not see any pro-war people there.
Uh-huh.
And so the other interesting thing about this provision is it requires that students be educated about the reality of life in the military and being recruited.
Mm-hmm.
They are not going to be left without any information and being left with solely with whatever the recruiter says. The Resource Center for Nonviolence and I guess some other people are going to organize an educational curriculum to counterbalance the efforts of the recruiters.
Sounds good to me.
Yes, I thought it was very positive.
What's coming up, Thomas, in the next couple of weeks that people should be aware of? I know that peace action-wise, I guess there's a large rally at the town clock 4 to 6 tomorrow with the high school students.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's going to be a big demonstration on Saturday and another in Salinas on Sunday. I'm going to read that from the Indy Media Network as soon as I get there.
What's happening in the next few days? Tomorrow in the evening... From 5:30 to 7:30 at the Veterans Hall is going to be a campaign kickoff for the parcel tax initiative that will provide funding to the local schools to allow them to stay open with reasonable amounts of staffing. And there will be various speakers, including Emily Riley, who has a very good record on issues outside of actual administration of the city and policy related to the city, who will be speaking. So that's on Friday from 5:30 to 7:30. And I believe there'll be some kind of fundraising going on there, too, to help pay for the cost of that.
And is it the Vets Hall?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Tuesday, on April 1st, there's this community activist named Kim Hart, who's been working really hard to establish a teen center in Live Oak that would kind of have a surfing theme. She is going to have a meeting to, you know, further her work on this. I believe at her last meeting she got 30 to 40 people to turn out and productively contribute to it. And if anybody wants information about that meeting, they can email me at thomas@thomaslevitt.org, and I'll put them in contact with her.
Okay, and again, summarizing, this meeting is...
It's to help put together a community-based teen center for youth in the Live Oak area.
Okay. Now, you're Thomas Levitt, Thomas Levitt, @hotmail.com?
Yes, that will work.
Okay.
And then on April 17th, for those members who actually care to attend, there will be a Scan General membership meeting
from 6 to 10 o'clock. Now, a low-income SCAN membership costs $5, and if you feel that SCAN has not been proactive enough, you can show up to this meeting and express that. Unfortunately, there's a 30-day membership requirement for you to be able to vote, but if you join now, you will be able to vote at the fall membership meeting to select steering committee members if you're not happy with the performance of the current
group.
Think
of that. That's
and
pretty exciting, I must say.
You could potentially vote for me.
Yeah.
And I would guarantee you that, you know, if I get elected to the SCAN steering committee, that I will be advocating for causes.
Wait a minute.
I
are you telling me you will stand up against the dreaded Nora Hockman?
In the fall, I will consider running. I don't believe that Nora Hockman will be up for election at that point. I think she's up for election in this round.
I see. No. I mean, will you stand against her if she says nay
if
and you say...
If we disagree, then we will disagree.
Okay, this could be a significant...
I mean, I've disagreed with you, Robert. I've disagreed with much of the city council. I've disagreed with all sorts
that.
Of people, and I don't think that anybody would say that I have a hesitation about expressing my point of view.
Thomas Jeffrey Gale, who ever eager to speak and most uncharacteristically silent for the last 30 minutes, has a query for you.
Yes. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi. Welcome. I have been heavily involved with the Green Party for many years.
Mm-hmm.
I first interviewed Ralph Nader in 1976 when I covered the Democratic National Convention in Madison Square Garden for... the Pacific Sun and Marin, and I thought it was really incredible that in the Wall Street Journal, the number one, shall we say, newspaper in America
for the fascists,
that Mr. Albert Hunt, in his column this morning, was discussing who might get the Democratic nomination for president. And it astounded me, knowing Al Hunt, he's married to Judy Woodruff, that the bottom line, he never even mentioned that Dennis Kucinich was seeking the Democratic nomination for president, nor did he mention Carol Moseley Braun. Bottom line, I happen to know firsthand, I've known Dennis for a long time, that Ralph Nader and Dennis have an agreement, and the agreement goes like this. If Dennis Kucinich gets the Democratic nomination for president, Ralph Nader has told Dennis that he will not run for president of the United States in the year 2004 in the general election. So the reason I'm mentioning this is because it astounds me that the war is 1 week old, exactly 7 days old, and I monitor all of the news around the country, and I have yet to see Ralph Nader being interviewed on the Jim Lehrer NewsHour or Nightline with Ted Koppel. I have yet to see anyone to the left of center, Dr. Noam Chomsky. There's a cover story in the New Yorker magazine that came out Monday. It's absolutely brilliant. 40,000-word interview with Chomsky in the New Yorker. Dr. Seymour Hersh has a piece in the New Yorker which clearly documents in the same issue this Monday how the President of the United States was given a false memorandum last September stating that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction when we now know Iraq does not have any weapons of mass destruction.
Well, they've certainly been searching really hard and
they don't have any.
Did you see that they had these special teams that they were going to like drop in there to search for them immediately.
Right.
And, you know, it's quite interesting that, like, despite the fact that they do control or have had access to most of the country, that they haven't found anything. I would not expect, actually, for any mention of that to be made if, in fact, they actually do conquer Iraq. Well, or there will be some manufactured triviality like those aluminum tubes.
Well,
or
that was
plant something.
Read the New Yorker that came out Monday, Cy Hersh. He shows that's what it was about these aluminum tubes. And today, the big story in the news tonight at 6 o'clock was that Richard Perle, one of the leading conservative Republicans in the United States, in the administration, was fired today because he went to Saudi Arabia to cook up a deal which would enrich him. And there's great dissension.
Yes, he was the head. He was the unpaid head of some whatchamacallit.
Exactly. This is a huge scandal.
And he exploited that. Yes.
That's right. This scandal is as big as the Bernard Goldfein scandal dealing with Nixon and the Vicuna coat. This is a huge scandal today because it shows in the inner workings of the White House, where we have an illegal president, he wasn't legally elected, that Richard Pearl, who's got the ear of the president, has now been booted out.
But do you seriously think this is actually going to result in any consequences of note?
Well, I believe
there's... Is the American public going to react to this? Is Dennis Kucinich going to get the Democratic nomination?
Well, I believe in my heart that the bottom line is that the United States government right now, there is dissension inside of the United States government right now, starting inside of the president's kitchen circle, because Pearl was very big in that circle. And the bottom line is the war is not going well for the United States. There is a deep feeling. Bob Herbert's column in the New York Times this morning on the op-ed page, he challenged Laura Bush and the president to walk one block from the White House, where one of the oldest public high schools in Washington is decaying. They have no money. The school is falling apart, yet we're spending hundreds of billions of dollars. Notice I used the plural to destroy Iraq, destroy Baghdad, and then rebuild it again. How outrageous that is. The bottom line, I heard yesterday that the Veterans Administration, if you are a veteran of the Vietnam War, your benefits have been cut 50%. If you go to the VA hospital as a veteran of the Vietnam War, be you one of the 250,000 vets who are homeless as a result of the Vietnam War, you will not be taken care of. Only if you were a veteran of the Gulf War, they will see you because that was a recent war. Meantime, we have reports in the last 4 days that Agent Orange is now rampant in Southeast Asia. Plus, we had President Bush's father again. They dug out some more material that he wrote, that he urged his son not to send American troops into Iraq because this will be an instant replay of the Vietnam War. This is going to be a quagmire. This war is going to go on for years. This is World War III. Make no bones about it. The President of the United States actually was quoted this week as saying that our nation is at war. I mean, at war. We are out to destroy Iraq. Mm-hmm. We will do anything to kill Saddam Hussein, his family. And the bottom line is, I love this ad in the Good Times, which came out today in Santa Cruz, California, by an organization that I worked with in Chicago, Peace Action. The
yes.
headline on their paid advertisement in the Good Times, here's the headline: overthrow the government of the United States and get paid for it. Peaceful bandits wanted to take back our civil liberties by dismantling the war machine. We will challenge the government's insane addiction to guns, nukes, and greed. Yeah. Greed is the cancer. This war, in my opinion, is about oil. It's about money. It's about capitalism. It has nothing whatsoever to do with what the president and Colin Powell and Tony Blair are telling us it's about. And the public isn't stupid. The public is turning off network television right now. They're starting to listen to KPFA more. I saw the survey today.
We're going to interrupt you here, Jeffrey. I know you got more to say about this, and you will say. Thomas, I know you have to go.
Yes.
Do you have any comments in respect to this lengthy tirade by our very literate co-host here?
I don't disagree with any of it. The thing is that message and the information has to be taken to the people who have been kept ignorant by, you know, our captive press.
Well, Smiley Riley will be holding a town hall meeting on April 7th. You think that she and Representative Farr will be, shall we say, good speakers on this issue?
I am certain that they will say many things which people generally agree with, but I do not believe that Sam Farr will be politically indiscreet enough to express his dissatisfaction with the coverage of the local media, much of which is owned by multinational corporations. Again, I think he already realizes that the mistake of actually pointing that fact out was disturbed the overlords very much.
Thomas, thank you for being with us. Is there anything you want to conclude with before I bump you down the road here?
I would suggest that if people want one specific thing that they can invest energy in and have some hope of actually winning, as opposed to so many of the things that we have dispute with our local representatives in the city council, they can go work on the parcel tax, the Measure B, because if that passes, that will create $1 million in resources for the public schools to educate the most disadvantaged among us and to keep our schools, local schools, under our local control open.
Okay. Then the parcel tax, maybe you can take it up in the next show, or do you want to...
Sure. SaveAllOurSchools.org is one of the websites you can go to, and I'll talk to you again about that in the future.
Hey, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks, Thomas. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. If you're on the net, you're listening to us at www.microradio.net/FRSC. If you're calling us from Bangkok, our phone number is 831-427-3772, with whatever actually the national code is. I'm not sure the international code. We were giving you kind of a series of upcoming peace events. Tomorrow, the Youth Action Coalition High School and College Students Peace Rally in March will be starting at 4 o'clock. It'll be from 4 to 6 at the Santa Cruz Town Clock. I'm not sure what they're going to do or where they're going to go, but that's the place to assemble, downtown Santa Cruz. Then on Saturday, March 29th, that's the day after, Santa Cruz Town Clock at 1 o'clock will have a large march, hopefully a large march, rally at the, actually, to rally at the Raymond Street Park in Beach Flats at 2 p.m. and the 3 p.m. march to Lighthouse. So 1 o'clock at the Town Clock, 2 o'clock at the Raymond Street Park in the Beach Flats. Maybe they'll tear down the Nueva Vista project, you never can tell. Just kidding, of course. And maybe occupy it for the people or something, so that the old residents can actually get back in, the ones who were evicted from the Dolphin, Lee, and Rex Court properties. And then 3 p.m. march to Lighthouse. Actually, it's all about the peace situation, and I doubt they do anything of the kind, but if you want to support peace and ending the war and stopping the invasion and occupation, that's perhaps a place to go. Sunday at 3:30, Cesar Chavez Day in Salinas. Join the United Farm Workers in celebrating the life of Cesar Chavez. Demonstrate for world peace, justice for farm workers, driver's licenses for undocumented workers, and peace in Iraq. Great opportunity to build solidarity across the region and across issues. Carpools and buses will leave from Santa Cruz County Building at 10:30 a.m., and bus tickets can be reached at the can be gotten at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, 423-1626. All of this, by the way, you can read at your leisure on the internet at www.santacruz, one word, small letters, santacruz.indymedia, I-N-D-Y-M-E-D-I-A, indymedia.org. And it's under, the story is, it's actually a large story. It's Labor for Peace, Justice, and Civil Liberties, and it was posted March 25th, upcoming actions. Lots of interesting stories there, including stuff around the arrests at the Capitola 13, of which I was one, at the recruiting centers on 41st Avenue, and there's still people, lonely people, not many of them yesterday, but as I drove by, picketing. You got something you wanted to say, Jeffrey?
Saturday morning, also at the University of California Inn, I guess that's on Ocean, there's a very important meeting dealing with the criminal justice system here in Santa Cruz and all of the racial profiling that goes on in the courts here, in our jails, some of the leading authorities in this area, public defenders, people are coming up from Los Angeles. So I urge everyone Saturday morning to go
what
to
time?
That event. I believe the registration is like 9:30, starts at 10 o'clock, and then you could leave there and still do the other things that Robert's talking about.
That's probably, if you remember, that's the old Holiday Inn, now the student-occupied Santa Cruz Inn, I guess it's called, on Ocean, about a block from the courthouse, right next to the San Lorenzo Creek area. I think it's called the San Lorenzo Creek. This is, as I said before, is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. If you want to try to reach us by internet, you can give a quick email to rnorse, that's me, rnorse, R-N-O-R-S-E, Norse, at hotmail.com, rnorse, one word, at hotmail.com, and I'll try to answer your questions. Or you can give us a call. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. Keep an eye on the light there, Jeffrey, to make sure that we note any calls coming in, and although I think the ringer may be on. As I promised earlier in the show, we have a special half-hour on-the-spot interview of the ACLU's involvement with trying to restore and defend the civil liberties of homeless people in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I'm actually going to play that shortly. This is the soundtrack of a video, which hopefully will be aired at some point on community television, or perhaps segments of it, by activist Becky Johnson. And the person involved is Alan Lichtenstein, who actually is the chief counsel for the ACLU, and it was recorded on March 17th, 2003. Before we do, however, let's take a brief musical break and do a breather, so to speak. That was a good tape, but apparently it's gotten a little slower over the years. Let's go directly to Las Vegas, shall we? Hang with us.
Hi. What's your name?
Alan Lichtenstein.
And Alan, you're an attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union?
I'm general counsel of the ACLU of Nevada.
Uh-huh. And so do you have work with the homeless issues or issues of homeless people and their civil rights in Nevada and here in Las Vegas as well?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And now, I was visiting here, and I noticed that along the strip where all the big casinos are, I didn't see any homeless people here at all, at least visually. I assume there are quite a few homeless people in Las Vegas.
Yeah, you're unlikely to find them on the strip. You're more likely to find them closer to the downtown area. One of the reasons for that is the reasons you're not going to find homeless on this trip. One is because the police tend to arrest them when they're in tourist areas. But also, over the years, actually decades, they've pursued a strategy of creating a homeless corridor, which is what it's been called, where the services for homeless people have been located in an effort to sort of keep them located there. Recently, they're attempting to get rid of the homeless corridor, in a sense, get rid of the homeless people by moving facilities out of there and essentially moving the homeless out of there.
Mm-hmm. So what tactics do the police or the public officials use to get a homeless person out of an area where they don't want them?
Well, other than basic harassment, one of the things they announced that they were doing a few months ago was downtown arresting people for jaywalking. And they said quite clearly that if a person was a tourist, they'd give them a warning and let them go without an arrest. But if they were homeless or looked shabby or whatever, they'd take them to jail. What they tend to do is arrest homeless people and indigent people for charges such as jaywalking or sleeping at a bus stop. They'll put them in jail for generally up to about 7 days before they ever see a judge. And then the typical tactic is to allow them to plead guilty for time served. Otherwise, if they want to demand their rights, mm-hmm. They can have a trial about a month later. Meanwhile, they're in court for that extra month. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of arrests of homeless people on those kinds of charges. There is not enough shelter space. Everyone has acknowledged that. and they have rousted these 10 cities that have sprung up at times. Mm-hmm. So the homeless now have, there's still a lot, there's still probably about 8,000 homeless around downtown, but they're more out of sight, mm-hmm. not congregated in one specific area.
Mm-hmm. And now, you said that they would arrest them for, say, sleeping at a bus stop.
Right.
Is that a misdemeanor?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And is that the actual charge of sleeping?
Bus stop, or something like failing to obey a traffic signal, which is jaywalking or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're an infraction?
Those are infractions, and people are sent to jail for that. And sent to jail when, instead of being OR'd out, they can't post bonds because they're having money, so they actually stay in jail.
Mm-hmm. Are people OR'd because they have a physical address to go to? Is there, are they more likely to get out if they have housing?
Well, sure, clearly, if they are not homeless, they're going to be OR'd. Frankly, if they're not homeless, they're unlikely to be thrown in jail for something like jaywalking.
Mm-hmm. Were they more likely to be cited and released on the spot, or ignored?
Well, not even cited at all.
Or ignored completely.
Or ignored completely.
Uh-huh.
Certainly, they even announced a policy that they would send people who are homeless to jail. Tourists, they just say, don't jaywalk anymore.
Mm-hmm. What is the percentage of homeless that actually have shelter here in Las Vegas?
I don't have the exact figures with me.
Mm-hmm. I think it's
directly the people who are taking the statistics.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that has happened in the last year, one of the major service providers, MASH Village, pulled out because, as they said, they were really not getting enough funding or cooperation from the city. The city was supposed to find a replacement. It never did.
Mm-hmm.
So you're having homeless shelters and homeless service providers not being supported and funded. A recent thing that happened last week, a group that's been around for about 20 years, was a operating group of a religious one called God and the Ministries.
Mm-hmm.
Been around, providing shelter, no funding from anyone, done good work. The city went after them and closed them down on a zoning issue.
Mm-hmm.
So it is very clearly an anti-homeless policy.
So that's even against shelter providers and service providers.
Correct.
Are being run out of the area.
And the mayor.
Because they have the wrong kind of clientele, no doubt.
Because they don't want homeless people in.
Mm-hmm.
They want to chase homeless people away. The mayor of Las Vegas has said that. What he has said numerous times is, I don't want homeless in my city. In fact, his proposal, which he got a lot of criticism for, but he never really backed down from, was to take an unused prison 30 miles down the road in Jean and use that to house the homeless.
Hmm.
So there's nothing here that's particularly subtle. There
mm-hmm.
is a desire to get rid of them because they're not good for tourism.
So do you find that there's a large amount of resources that in Nevada that are going to, for incarceration and police services for basically harassing and moving people out of areas, rather than the social
sure.
services or affordable housing that would...
In general, in a variety of areas, the jails and the police are being used instead of funding social services.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even just with homeless, it's even in the area of mental health. There aren't the kind of mental health facilities. There aren't the kind of detox facilities.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone, homeless or otherwise, is found drunk on the street, there's no place to take them to, they end up in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Someone is behaving irrationally, indicating mental health problems, they'll be taken to jail, most likely, because there's no place else for them.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're homeless or not homeless, but very clearly, there's a disparate impact on the homeless population
mm-hmm.
because so many of the homeless people are there because they do have these kinds of problems.
Mm-hmm.
So the lack of social services clearly exacerbates the problem. Here in Las Vegas, you have another kind of problem that you don't have in other communities. People who are homeless because of a gambling addiction.
Mm-hmm.
You go into the casinos and they encourage people to gamble until there's no more money left,
mm-hmm.
but there are really no services or programs to either prevent that from happening or to help people who are then become down and out because they lost all their money
mm-hmm.
through a gambling problem.
Is this a significant percentage of the homeless here in Las Vegas?
It's significant enough. Again, I don't have the figures, but it is not. It is not a minor problem. It is a significant portion of the problem. Here, like every place else, also a significant portion of the homeless are veterans who are out on the street.
Now, I don't understand if people are arrested for jaywalking or sleeping at a bus stop or something, and it's a misdemeanor. Aren't they eligible for public defenders and jury trials?
No. Unless the state, in this case the city, is looking for or asking for jail time for even 6 months or so, but any jail time, they're not entitled to a public defender. They never get sentenced to jail. That's not the issue. The issue is until their case gets to trial, they're going to be in jail. Even if they're acquitted, they'll still have spent time in jail.
Do you find that that they're arrested and jailed, but then charges are dropped? Is that or reduced?
No, what generally happens is they're arrested, they're put in jail, and then they have the opportunity to either plead guilty for time served as a sentence, or if they want to actually stand for their rights and have a trial, that's going to be down the road for another 30 days. They still won't be let out.
They're held in jail until trial?
Right.
So do many people opt to plead not guilty? And
not very many.
Yeah.
And then it would be comical if it weren't so serious. Then the judge says, when someone pleads guilty, has anyone tried to coerce you into pleading guilty? And one person say, what are you talking about? You just told me that if I don't plead guilty, I'm going to spend another 30 days in jail. And the judge getting mad and saying, well, then we're just going to have a not guilty plea for you, and wouldn't let him plead guilty. So that's the way the system works here. And the public is really not aware of it. The public thinks that everyone gets this, you know, goes in with a lawyer the first time, and they don't even get lawyers, and don't even get to talk to the judge or even the public defender until it's all done by video, so then we can get to go to court.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Amazing. So do you have laws here limiting begging or, you know, panhandling?
No. We have successfully dealt with the situation with the ACLU so that begging and panhandling by itself is not illegal. Obviously, obstructing pedestrian traffic or harassing people would be, but it is not illegal to beg. It's not illegal to stand on the sidewalk with a sign saying, please help me, or we'll work for food, or something like that.
Are these regulated time, place, and manner?
Some of the regulations are pretty limited. People can beg on the street. Now, again,
so you don't have it that's illegal to hold a sign after dark asking for something of value?
No.
Like we have in Santa Cruz?
No, we do not have anything like that. And we at the ACLU have been pretty successful in fighting attempts to criminalize panhandling or other speech on the sidewalk.
So if you criminalized someone who had a sign that with a content-specific message, something like, you know, please help, anything helps, God bless, would that be treated any differently than another sign that says, say, have a nice day?
Well, one of the issues that we've been dealing with in Las Vegas in terms of sidewalks isn't specifically about the homeless. It's about the attempt to privatize the sidewalks and turn them into non-First Amendment zones for all sorts of people, anti-war protesters, to out call services passing out their flyers to homeless people. Those are battles that we at the ACLU have been fighting over the past several years and been very successful at. So they have been limited in their ability to actually sustain laws that make it difficult for anyone with a sign or anyone with a message to use the sidewalk as a public forum, even though the sidewalks are the quintessential public forum.
Do you have loitering laws here?
Those have been struck down also.
Okay, so loitering is only still exists if it's in conjunction with another crime.
Right.
So do people still put up no loitering signs, businesses and things like that?
They may put them up, but again,
they don't have the force.
People have a right to be out on the sidewalk, and the courts have been very clear about that. The courts have been very clear about that. It is not against the law to stand on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
It is not against the law to hold up a sign. It is not against the law to ask someone for money. Without obstruction. Mm-hmm.
But somehow on the strip, when I go there, I don't... are you familiar at all with the broken windows theory?
The broken windows theory, it doesn't sound familiar.
Yeah. It's a theory for police enforcement in public areas, especially downtown business districts, where the police look up and down the street and determine who belongs and who doesn't. And then the people who belong, of course, are residents and shop owners and shoppers. And the people who don't belong are young people, homeless people, people who look a little scruffy, or strangers. And then the police would pick those people to basically harass with a whole series of little tiny ordinances. You know, it's illegal to put your foot up on a planter. It's illegal to lean against a wall. Illegal to be under an eave of a store, even if it's raining. That sort of thing.
I've not heard the term broken windows. I've heard, obviously, kind of harassment that does take place is familiar, and certainly familiar in Las Vegas, where they're concerned about tourists, and there's that discrepancy. You may or may not know that the Southern California affiliate of the ACLU recently just filed a suit against Los Angeles about their treatment of the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And that's we're looking at that, and seeing if we can use some of those same theories to do the same thing here. But that may be a policy. It clearly violates the Constitution, violates the Equal Protection Clause. Our laws say that you're judged by what you do, not who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And to target people because they're undesirable types of people is clearly against the law. That's the true breaking of the law, not standing under an eaves or sleeping at a bus stop or something like that. Unfortunately, too much of the public tends not to see themselves in jeopardy when these things take place, so there's a tendency to look the other way.
Mm-hmm. Do you find an anti-homeless sentiment here in Las Vegas?
I find it mixed. From a lot of people who have not really encountered the homeless. Last year, about this time, there was a tent city that sprung up on the street outside of the shelters for people who couldn't get into the shelters.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent a lot of time down there, and the comments that I heard were getting kind of interesting. Because, for one thing, people tend to think of the homeless as a homogenous group, and they're obviously not.
Mm-hmm.
People are homeless for all sorts of reasons.